What's going on, guys? This is Carm Gill, the director of G-Funk, and I'm chilling here at Rebel Radio. Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to Rebel Radio. We got big things popping at Rebel Radio this month. I know you heard us at South by Southwest, live on stage with Catherine Burns from The Moth recently, as well as John Levy, which we caught up with at South by. And next, we're off to Coachella. We'll be podcasting live from the Coachella media tent, bringing you some special interviews from participating artists. More to come on that. But this week, we're in studio with Karam Gill. He's the director of G-Funk, a documentary about Warren G and West Coast gangster rap. Looks like it's going to be an exciting movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I know they were blowing up at South By. And he's got some really interesting things to say about his process of making his first feature documentary. Karam's a young director. He's been coming up through the music video circuit, making videos for folks like Marshmello and Borgore. And he's gonna kind of give us some insight into his process, how he got this job as a young dude who didn't live through the G-Funk era or experience any of that personally. But he says the key to his success has just been preparation, that he went in knowing more about it than anybody else they'd talked to and won the job that way. So really good lessons coming up from Karam Gill about G-Funk right after our EDM.com track of the week. That was Thello with a track called What Matters, your EDM.com track of the week. That's on the Lavish channel. Go to soundcloud.com/lavish for more just like that. And right now, let's get into the interview with Karam Gill. So anyway, that's partly why I was really excited to talk to you, because you know, I lived it a little bit, and you know, I certainly remember it. But I'm excited, you know, to learn about you. And so, dude, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the high from South by Southwest and everything else you're doing. But take us back. I'm interested to know how you became the guy that's making this G-Funk documentary. So have you always been into music?
My parents always my parents always used to play a lot of like 70s, like Earth, Wind & Fire, you know, like Isley Brothers, all that type of stuff growing up.
Do you remember the first record that you bought?
The first record I bought was in 1999, 2001 by Dre.
Oh, really?
Top dog, buy them all. Yeah, I'm burning it up. DPGC, you should be turning it up. CPT, LBC, yeah, we hooking back up. And when they bang this in the club, baby, you got to get up. Cause homies, thug homies, yeah, they giving it up.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
My mom bought it for me, and then they put it on, and they were like, wow, I don't know if we should have got this. Yeah, man, so that was probably the first one.
Yeah. And so you were hooked on hip-hop from the beginning?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so, I kind of grew up on that music.
Yeah.
And that kind of got me into, like, you know, the Warren G, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre era.
Yeah. So I know now you have, I've seen a bunch of your music videos, some of your brand stuff, and it looks like you have a great portfolio coming together.
It's coming together slowly.
What was the first, do you remember the first music video that, like, really impacted you?
Man,
That's okay.
I don't know, man. I kind of just like started watching music videos, and then actually, it's kind of such a weird video. I had a neighbor, and it was the Right There video by Chingy, and for some reason, that might have been like the first video I watched. It wasn't like profoundly creative, but I was just like, oh, I didn't know music video existed. And
that's funny.
That might have been one of the first ones.
And then, so how'd you start making video? Was that like, at what point did you know that you wanted to do that?
I've always like been, you know, shooting photos and whatnot. Okay. The full story is actually, I used to play college soccer and I tore my ACL and I kind of took a big break from like, you know, creative stuff to play soccer. And I was trying to go semi-pro and, you know, do something there.
Oh, wow.
And tore my ACL, had reconstructed knee surgery in college 2.5 years in. And then my buddy was like, look, dude, like you got to, you know, get back to doing something productive or else you're just going to sit around all day.
Yeah.
So he's like, come shoot my show. And then I went to go shoot his show. I ran to Warren backstage. I was like, can I shoot your show? Because he was opening up for Warren.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of when
I... Who was your friend?
Oh, just Kid Rob. He's like a smaller artist that's coming up right now.
Okay.
He's pretty talented.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'm opening up for Warren G if you want to come through. So I was like, all right. So me and my buddy went. We shot Warren's show and ran into Warren. And then that led to me starting to do all of his media, creative direction and stuff that. And, you know, he was actually the first video that I did.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it started.
That's the, what was the video?
From my house?
Yeah, yeah.
It was me and a couple of my buddies just kind of collaborate on that with beats.
Nice. Yeah. My city, my town, nigga, that's my stomping ground. My streets, my homies, my turf, my people since birth with heaters under their t-shirts. My. In the middle of the street. So how'd you know, like, you meet Warren G and like, what gives you the confidence to say, I can do your creative and like, where's that come from?
Warren's just such a cool guy. Warren like came up to us and he's like, what do you, cause we were just backstage. He's like, what do you guys do? Cause we had cameras around.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, we, you know, we shoot photos, videos. And what are we going to say? I don't know. We just mess around.
Sure.
And he was like, well, you guys like started talking to us. And I was like, well, can we shoot your show? And he said, yeah. So he brought us on stage with him and
yeah.
We cut it up. Next day, we were at Jimmy Kimmel with him. And from there on out, we were just, like, doing all his media.
Nice. And so were you thinking that this is a career at that point? Or what were you thinking?
At that point, it was just, like, you know, I'm in college, like, 20 years old, 21 years old. I just thought it was cool. Yeah. All my friends were like, what? You're touring with Warren G?
Right.
Like, you're at Snoop Dogg shows? Like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
I was like, I don't know, man. It's just... It wasn't until about 6 months in that I realized that, you know... This is something that I really want to do, mm-hmm. like, full time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stopped rehabbing my knee and stopped soccer.
So did you think you were going pro soccer before that?
Or you not, like, pro, like, yeah. semi-pro. Like,
yeah.
You know, just dabble in, like, a couple years after college.
Yeah.
I was never, like, a professional.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and how much did you know... You know, of the Warren story and the whole, you know, G-Funk, like, sound like you were into that music, but you must have been pretty young when you discovered all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how much were you familiar with, like, all the history and the culture and all that?
Mm-hmm. I was born after Regulate came out, so, 94, so,
right.
It also, I mean, I figured it all out when I was on the road with Warren, because we would just, you know, be with huge artists, and they would just be talking about crazy things like right
talk
next
about
to
the old days.
Oh, me and Tupac did this, and me and this happened. Me and Biggie went to, you know, Bed-Stuy did this or whatever. You know, and after a while, I was like, dude, like, you have the most incredible story, like a true, like, hero's journey.
It's, yeah,
you know, a scripted thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started writing out, and he's like, I've been wanting to do this for years.
Nice.
And so I was like, well, damn, let's do it.
That's cool. And then I know you've done a bunch of other music videos, Borgore and Marshmello, and saw a bunch of stuff. So where did that, how'd that happen?
You know, shortly after working with Warren, you know, once you kind of work with someone in the industry, other people kind of, you're like validated, if you will.
Yeah.
And my buddy Daniel, his cousin's Mo Shalizi, Marshmallow's manager.
Yeah.
And, so that's how, you know, we started working with Marshmallow and doing all his stuff. And then, you know, the other stuff kind of just came, people just kind of hit me up, hit our company up. Yeah.
So what do you think, like, you know, when you start getting into that with different artists, like, there's so many directors out there, right? And so what do you feel like you bring that's different, or maybe how do you, like, articulate your unique perspective?
I think that, you know, being younger, I'm 22, so it kind of, a lot of labels and artists and things like that, when they work with someone like myself, you get someone who understands how to connect with that younger demographic and that digital demographic. That's one thing. And the other thing is, I think I have one of my strengths is just being able to, like, understand what, you know, the kid who sits in the back of the class is going to want to see and what's going to connect with him emotionally, but also the guy who's the quarterback of the football team, and be able to kind of create content that appeals to all types of kids, as well as adults, but stuff that's universal.
So why do you think you're able to do that?
I don't know, man. I think, you know, I've experienced a lot of different things. I think I've traveled quite a bit. My parents always introduced me to different things. I've always made an effort to try to get to know all people, whether, you know, like, especially in LA high school, it's like the clickiest thing in the world. But if you step out of that and you try to meet everyone, you understand their perspectives, and that then, you know, consequently helps you understand the world better, I think.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting. So tell us about the film. So it's Warren's story, right? How much do you think is, like, personal versus just broader, like, what was happening in music and G-Funk and all that?
So it's the G-Funk story, with Warren G being, you know, the backbone and, you know, protagonist, if you will.
Cool.
And it's his story.
Yeah.
It's basically how, you know, G-Funk, big picture, how G-Funk commercialized hip-hop music, how it transformed hip-hop from gangster rap that, you know, was urban and, you know, it's very select, to music that became pop, and white America started purchasing hip-hop albums. You know, Snoop's album was the first album in the history of music to debut at number one. First debut album at number one on the Billboard charts. Somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky ass hits like every single day. Dre and Warren, also extremely commercial.
Sure.
Talks about that, and then that's kind of like the backstory of the rise of G-Funk, and then you have Warren G, trials and tribulations that he overcame in his path to success.
Yeah.
And being such an instrumental figure in connecting the dots with everyone. So those two things together, I'd say, shape the framework of the documentary.
What'd you learn? What were the big surprises that you learned in that process?
Preparation is like insanely important. I'm sure you know that as a journalist, but yeah. Especially with this documentary, we didn't want to have a narrator. We were in talks with some pretty, you know, big artists to narrate originally, but we were like, you know what, G-Funk's a smooth sound, it's a flowing sound, we need a documentary that flows seamlessly. So in order to have everyone complete each other's sentences and have this fluid story, it's, you know, it took a year or two of just straight research and scripting interviews and mapping out these big 6-foot boards, two of them, of how the story flows.
Wow.
I don't think I'm ever going to take those apart, these big core boards.
Yeah, I bet.
So, yeah, just a lot of preparation, man.
Yeah. How's that experience shaped your perception of the music? Obviously, you said you didn't live through it, right? So it's funny. I think, it sounds like you're the right choice, hearing you talk about it, but you wouldn't necessarily be the obvious choice, that if somebody told me there was a Warren G documentary, a G-Funk documentary, I probably wouldn't have guessed that it was you making it.
Yeah. that's what a lot of people were saying.
The
producers, too, they said the same thing. And they're like, I was like, you guys, you don't want to meet with me, you can. So they all flew in from Cleveland.
So who produced the film?
Our executive producer was Matt Carpenter, who's a really one of the most incredible dudes I've ever met out of Cleveland. Bob Ruggieri, he did Take Shelter, Kings of Summer, Cannes Film Festival, Sundance. Okay. Gary Uzdahl, and Rafael Chavez, along with Warren G. And Gary came from Tyler Perry. Rafael and him have a company together, and then Warren.
Okay. So they didn't necessarily feel like you were the obvious choice.
Well, no, they didn't have anything against it. They were just like, all right, this is weird. Like, this kid, you know, literally was born after the fact. Right. Let's, you know, see what he's all about. Because they hired me when I was 20, 21.
So how'd you overcome that?
I mean, they all flew in to one of the producer's houses. He has a big house in Tarzana. And they just started grilling me on the project. They're like, all right, we'll start talking about it. So I just went through it. And I had these big boards, and they started asking me, well, what if this doesn't happen? What if we don't get that interview? And I was like, oh, well, then we do this. And they were like, and by the end of it, they're like, honestly, man, like, I don't think anyone knows more about this than you do.
Nice.
And I was like, yeah, here's the two big boards.
Yeah.
Do you have any more questions?
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm excited to have a new sponsor on board. This week, we got Blue Apron. If you're into cooking, Blue Apron's about to make it a whole lot easier for you. They're gonna save you time, money, make it more convenient, enable you to cook with family, friends, whatever. What they do is they deliver right to your door fresh and healthy recipes ready for you to cook. They deliver all over the country, 99% of the country, they can get it straight to your door, and it's just the exact amount of each ingredient, so you're not wasting food. It's healthy. The food is all responsibly sourced and sustainable and all that good stuff that makes it good for you and your family. And for me, I like that it's never the same recipe, so lots of variety. Check out this week's menu and you'll get your first three meals free because you're a Rebel Radio listener. That's first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/rebel. I think you'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/rebel. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. So having gone through this now, how does that change your filmmaking? Like from before this project to after?
It's given me, not that I didn't have it before, but I think it's given me a little more confidence to now seeing this come to fruition is just like, damn, like I didn't, you know what I mean? Like to have all these incredible artists and athletes and names behind this project. I think it's just going to open doors and it's going to, you know, it's giving me the confidence to go out and really pitch anything I want and whatever is on my mind and whatever I want to create. So kind of empowering, I guess.
Yeah. And what do you think you want to do as a filmmaker? Like if you look back or if you look ahead, what do you think your contribution is to filmmaking?
Just, you know, telling stories. I love like, you know, underdog stories. Warren's an underdog story. I love stuff like that. I love music projects. I want to create things that are very commercial, but have a lot of, undertones, whether it's political or, you know, thematic, like you need to overcome this, like giving you something to take away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But using the commerciality of the project to reach a wider amount of people. So like this project, for instance, is, I think it's very commercial. It's going to go and out in the world and do a lot of things.
Sure.
Within it, you know, there's a lot about the black, white police tension, the Rodney King, a lot of things that people kind of now with OJ and all that stuff that's come out, it's out there, but
right.
A lot of the police stuff, this documentary addresses that head on. It also addresses, you know, overcoming things and family and friendship and being able to do it through a commercial project allows you to reach a lot of people
mm-hmm.
and get your message out there. So I think that's kind of what I want to do as a filmmaker.
That's great. So other than convincing the producers, were there obstacles that you had overcome in the process? Or was it all smooth?
No, I mean, it was a lot of creative roadblocks that you had to just, you know, if you couldn't get an interview or you couldn't do something, like, okay, well, how do you fill that hole?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just, yeah, mostly just little creative things that came up, but that's like anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that easy for you then to be like, kind of nimble and just jump to the next? Or is there anything that's like, you know, is there any point where you start to question, like, am I making the right choices?
You always question everything you do. But you got to have a vision and be strong-willed. Mm-hmm. And as a director, you know, you can't, you know, constantly be second-guessing. But, you know, thankfully I had, you know, two incredible editors and one in Los Angeles that was incredible, Andrew Primavera, and he was, you know, the best soundboard and you know, helped with so many, creating so many ideas and, you know, ways to do things that you mm-hmm. just bounce things off of him. And, you know, I'd ask him, like, all right, man, what do you think about this? And he'd hit me with the pros, cons. Like, I'm like, damn, like, there you go. He laid it out. Like, right. You know, so
that's cool.
I think having a good editor really gets you around that.
Yeah. What about, you know, obviously, like, there was a lot of controversy at the time. At the time all this was happening, right, between East Coast, West Coast. You know, as I mentioned, I had front row seats to that with West Side Connection. Who wanna see me as I slide my locs on, let my khaki sing. West Side connect gang, bing, bing, bang. Run away, you'll get your whole crew sprayed by this H, double O to the D to the SDA. Ain't no hiding it, I'm gang related, simple and plain, which means I could care less. And, you know, the Biggie and Tupac and just beef. It was a time of a lot of beef. Is that still lingering? Like, are people hesitant at all to talk about that stuff?
No, not at all. Huh. It's actually funny, the documentary, every single person from Too Short to Snoop to Warren pretty much all said it was all the media that kind of created that.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the time, Warren was with Biggie in New York during that whole time. And
yeah.
It wasn't really what it was made to be. It was kind of instigated and created.
Sure.
You know, to sell media. And I mean, everyone agreed on that for the most part.
Yeah, I remember when I was with Dub C, we went to New York and, you know, we were a little, I would just say concerned, because not knowing, you know, what we're walking into. And we're walking down the street and like some kids ran up on us and were just like, you know, appreciative. They were like just big fans of Dub C in the middle of New York City. And, you know, I think we all had that moment where we kind of realized that like fans don't care. They love, you know, they love music and they love this culture. And you know, that's one particular, you know, there's a lot of motive. And I think that is to your point about how that commercialized hip hop, you know, in general. I think that's totally true. And I think all the beef had a big part of that, right? That it wasn't simply just the music, but there was all this theater around it playing out in these larger than life characters. And I think that's a lot of what fueled just how big everything got.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it, you know, I think it almost hurt it as well.
I think long term it did.
Yeah.
For sure.
No, I think it hurt it a lot. I mean, the G-Funk era essentially came to like a, not a halt, but it stopped a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, with the progression of G-Funk spreading and just like the, you know, that sound spreading, it became a lot more gritty and intense and, you know, battle rappy and,
yeah.
And like East versus West, diss tracks, this and that. Whereas like before that you had, you know, the Chronic, Doggy Style, Regulate, Dog Food, all that stuff was very like, just let's party and have a good time.
Yeah.
It's the incredible, the lyrical. You can't be me like Niecy. To see me is gonna take a miracle. I'm driving motherfuckers hysterical with a touch of this twister, stylistic mixture. What I create pulsates, there is no escape.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from my experience of it was that really after Biggie and Tupac got killed, like the industry, whether it was the labels or the radio stations or the concert promoters, like everyone just was like, okay, we're done now. You know what I mean? Because it went from being hype and fun and just entertainment to, you know, this real thing. And, you know, you couldn't get insurance. You couldn't get, you couldn't get played on radio anymore. Because I think people just realized, like, they didn't want to take it that seriously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the documentary doesn't go, it kind of cuts off after, you know,
sure.
Source Awards and Suge Knight did
yeah.
whatever he did and say that whole thing. And it
yeah.
touches on Biggie and Tupac a little bit. And then we literally just, you know, we kind of skip forward to today and Wiz Khalifa and Ty Dolla Sign, YG, all those guys and what they did. But no, I agree with everything you're saying, definitely.
Do you feel like music is still having that type of impact, or that it can, or how do you feel like music's kind of place in culture has changed?
I think, you know, music is always is going to be like the focus point of, or the center point of culture. But I guess regards to hip hop specifically, it's changing the way that technology is coming to play, and everyone's able to create, you know, a great beat. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them sound the same, and a lot of artists sound the same, and a lot of, you know, whereas back then it's like you have to be original. There's no other, there's no two Snoop Dogs that sound the same. There's no two Warren G's that sound the same. And you can't, you know what I mean? Whereas now it's like there's like four or five artists that if you put them on a track, it would take me a second to figure out exactly who it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest difference, is the originality aspect of innovating, and, you know. But there's guys that are like Drake's album, you know, he's innovating. That sounds like the whole Jamaican thing he's got going on. Like, no one's really been doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some of it, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just that there's that much more music coming out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? That back then, you know, it was hard work to make a record. It's not that it's not hard work now, but like to get a studio, to, you know, to find the beats, to, you know, all of that just took a lot of time. And, you know, records took months and years to make, where now they take weeks in a lot of cases, right? And I don't know that that doesn't necessarily mean that they're worse. But I think it just, that means that there's that much more of it, right? So it's, you know, there's five guys that sound alike only because now there's room for five guys. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yo, if you're feeling hip-hop documentaries, go back into Rebel Radio archives and check out my interview with Stretch and Bobbito. We caught up with them live on location at the premiere, the LA premiere for their documentary, Radio That Changed Lives. If you don't know Stretch and Bobbito, you need to learn your history. That's a good one. Of course, finish this one first. Let's get back into the interview with Karam Gill. So talk about South By. I know we just got back from South By. It sounded like you had some really successful premiere there. Was that the world premiere? Was it the first time people seen it?
Yeah, that was a world premiere.
Yeah.
Then we had two other screenings. Man, it was incredible. Incredible experience.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about a couple things. First of all, just like, what does that feel like for strangers to be seeing it for the first time and the response you got, and what's going on inside?
Oh, dude, it's it's crazy, man. I mean, you know, it's just, I don't even know like how to describe it. Like my buddies, they're all just like, damn, man, like, we've just been reading the reviews and, like, you know, the press is coming out. And
yeah.
The first night, you know, we got a standing ovation, which was an incredible, incredible feeling to see, you know, years of work going into something and people liking it.
Mm-hmm. You know? What was going through your head before the movie started?
I got to get the sound right.
Yeah. are you just focused on those kind of details?
Yeah. The thing is, I didn't even sit. Like, I just stood in the back for all the screenings.
Yeah.
I've seen it probably 100, 200 times.
Of course.
So I was just sitting there like, you know what? My friends are here. My family's here. There's a bunch of people in this theater.
Yeah.
So
are you able to enjoy it? I know, like, you know, I've never made something like that, but anything that I've created, like, I see, my focus is always on the flaws that I see.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes other people don't see because they're just not paying the kind of attention that I'm paying. Are you doing that, or are you able to, like, enjoy the moment and kind of savor it?
I'm able to enjoy the moments. Like, you know, DOC and Deion Sanders had some hilarious parts that people were cracking up at. I love that stuff. But at the same time, this was a relatively finished project. There's like, it's definitely needs a new sound mix, and there's some elements to it that it's a work in progress to a level. So those things just killed me sitting there watching it. And like, I was like, damn, like, this shit should not be there.
Sure.
That was frustrating.
Yeah.
But it was, other than that, it was cool. Not many people, probably no one noticed it other than me.
Of course. Yeah, for sure. So then externally, like, how does it change the game? You know, you wake up the next day, or you come back from South By, you've had three great screenings and a bunch of great reviews and all that. Like, how's that changed the game for you?
Oh, man. I mean, like I was saying earlier, I think it opens up a lot of doors for me, you know. When people find out that, you know, this was, I was 20, 21, 22, 22 yeah. now. Yeah. Working on this, you know, people are, you know, they want to see what I'm working on next and they want to kind of talk to me. So it's cool. It helps me as a filmmaker career-wise. It's,
for sure.
It's awesome.
So what's that process like? How do you capitalize on that momentum, right? If you think about your own career, because, you know, I think for a project like this, again, I've never made a film, but my understanding, it's pretty all-consuming, right? You're just, your head down trying to make this thing, right? And then you make it, and now you got to go out and bring it to the world and promote it and all that. And at the same time, like you said, it's going to create a lot of opportunity that people want to know what's next, right? That and I think now is you have this window. Hopefully it'll last a long time and be a huge window, but you never know, right? How big that window is of opportunity to gain momentum for your career. So how do you do that?
You just stay working. Don't get complacent. You know.
So are you already? Is there a next project already?
Oh yeah, I got two things in development right now.
Nice.
I can't really go too in depth on them right now.
Okay.
But
music stuff.
Music driven feature length projects.
Nice.
Scripted and documentary. And then, you know, I'm kind of getting interest from a couple different people to work on a couple different things.
Yeah.
So, there's definitely stuff in the works. It's just, you know, picking that next project.
Sure.
The reason that this one, I think, worked out well for me and I kept my interest and I never got bored is because I'm fascinated with it. I don't ever want to do something that's not, I don't have my heart in 100% or I'm not passionate about it, or I can't sit there all day long and enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I think it's about finding that next one that fulfills that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, as you said, like, you're going to have to watch this, whatever movie it is, you know, 100-plus times. Mm-hmm. If it's something you don't really care about,
oh yeah,
that's going to be painful.
Exactly, man. So that's kind of where my head's at.
Yeah, that's great. Do you have mentors, or are you figuring all this stuff out on your own?
My dad was a filmmaker.
Oh, okay.
Documentary filmmaker. He did some stuff for BBC and ITV. My parents are both from England.
Yeah.
So he's helped me out, you know, just kind of guiding me a little bit. And then Warren, honestly, has been one of my mentors. Just kind of teaching me how to be a good person in the entertainment industry. And just, you know, watch out for this, watch out for that. Or, you know, just even just observing how his demeanor is and how he acts.
Yeah.
Has been a mentor of some sort.
What is there a piece of advice that's been the most impactful for you?
Yeah, just he's literally just like, you know, stay true to those who help you out. And,
yeah.
You know, mostly the stuff you learn from Warren is just observing Warren. You know, the whole no ego aspect of it. And you know, like, he's a cool dude.
Yeah.
You just see that.
Yeah. How, I don't want to ask you to speak for him, but I'm curious what you observed, like, and not just him, right? But a lot of guys, like, you know, here Warren had this, you know, massive hit, you know, international hit record, whatever. And then, you know, now I know he still does this thing and he has a cool fan base, but it's not at that level, right? And I'm curious, like, how people sort of adjust to that, right? Like, it's a matter of, like, shifting expectations that I think sometimes, you know, and again, these guys, all of them were super young when they're having this, like, astronomical level of success. And I think it's human nature to just expect that to continue on this, you know, particular trajectory. And so I'm curious what you observed about people that, you know, where that didn't happen, where they didn't, you know, continue to be household names, but yet they're still, you know, making, they're still creative, right? They're still making stuff that a lot of people care about.
I mean, that's a tricky one. I don't know. You'd have to ask Warren. But I mean, just from what I see, I mean, everywhere I go, everyone loves Warren G and
yeah,
have a lot of respect for him. And he's still doing hit records. He had that hit record a couple years ago for Neo.
Mm-hmm.
Leave You Alone.
But you feel so good. She said, what if I could? But I gotta leave you alone.
Producing a bunch of stuff, you know. He's got a soundtrack coming out with a G-Funk movie that's going to be huge.
Cool. I know you do some brand stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that a little bit. What's is that? What drives you to want to do video for brands?
I think it's pretty fun to take a brand or a product within a brand, figure out who they're trying to sell it to, and try to create effective content to sell it to them. And mm-hmm. That just sounds like a really complicated version of saying marketing, but
sure,
and advertising. But I think, like I just got off the phone with Fujifilm just now, we were just kind of discussing, how can we create like a worldwide, docuseries, take this product around the world, and how can we integrate it into entertainment, maybe do a deal with a record label to do music videos that are shot on, just like different ideas.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting and to like be creative in that world. So it's just, it's just a different avenue.
Yeah. Is there something, given, the experience you have, is there something you feel that you bring to brands that's different than what they're getting? Is there a unique lens that you bring to a brand?
I think, what I was kind of saying earlier with like the universal ability to like target younger people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of brands are run by, 40, 50 year old dudes in suits. So,
sure.
When I meet with them, they're kind of getting a fresher, newer perspective.
Yeah.
What
do you think the brands that you talk to, what do they need to learn about connecting with young audiences?
I think being organic is one. Creating content that people want to actually see. I was reading an article the other day, or my buddy was telling me an article the other day about how story driven content is like a million times more effective than just stating like the facts or just selling the product. Like if you create a story, whether it's a fake story or whatever, around a sure. product,
yeah,
it just creates so much more buzz.
Huh.
And so I think that's one thing that is super effective.
Yeah.
Developing stories that people can connect to and relate to. Like, oh, I went through that.
Mm-hmm.
I relate to that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's a big one. So what about now that the project's done, you have to go out and market the film, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, that's, I think, in some ways puts you in a very different role than being the creator.
Mm-hmm.
What's the plan and how do you shift gears within yourself
mm-hmm.
to go into that marketing mode?
My creative agency that I founded with two of my buddies, Reed and Daniel, we're helping out the producers and the film with just the marketing content side of it.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to pull a bunch of like the stuff that wasn't on camera that was amazing. Like Ice-T had some amazing moments and
nice.
There's just some hilarious stuff. We're going to put that all together and have a full rollout campaign.
Okay.
And so I'm not probably spearheading that. I'll chime in when necessary. Whoever
sure.
picks up the film for distribution,
yeah,
they'll probably have a huge say in that. They will have a huge say in that. But I know that, what we have, so I'm going to help out and, chime in where necessary.
Of course. Yeah. And is it, obviously Netflix and streaming videos sort of changed the game, I think, where, probably not too long ago, if something wasn't in theaters, it sort of wasn't official. Is that something you guys think about, like just streaming versus theatrical?
Those offers are all, on the table and everything. I'm not really too... I'm involved in all that. It's kind of the producer's thing.
Okay.
But,
yeah.
I mean, we'd love to do everything. I would love to do everything personally, but
sure.
we'll see what happens. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're handling all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They just let me know what they decide.
Are there other, what's, do you have a, What are some other like music documentaries that you know are favorites of yours?
Oh man, I love the Amy Winehouse documentary.
Mm.
I loved I really, really liked the Amy Winehouse documentary. I like Tupac Resurrection was good. It's not a music documentary, it's an entertainment documentary. I love The Legend of Shep Gordon, Superman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's probably my favorite documentary.
That's great.
It's a great documentary.
Yeah.
Mike Myers did that one. So, yeah, I mean, I you know, I love documentaries. That's my thing, so.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I have a little speed round that I want to go through before we wrap up. Let me just make sure I get to all these right. Oh, what about favorite music video?
Favorite music video?
Yeah.
Ooh. I love the Sun Models Odessa video.
Okay.
By Ian Ponce Jewel. I really like that one. I love I forgot the name of the video. It's by Gustafelstein.
Okay.
It's like everyone knows it. I forgot the name of it. That's a great one. You know what? I really like the 24K Magic Bruno Mars video just because I thought the production value on it was incredible. I thought, you know, the way it was, the palette, everything about it was just so, the choreography was amazing.
Sure.
That's another one I really liked.
Do you like that song?
I don't mind it.
Okay.
I think it's a poppy, cool song.
Yeah.
But, I mean, those are probably like three videos that just come to the top of my head.
Yeah, yeah.
Should be.
No, I was more, I asked that more curious, like, does it matter if you like a song, like, can you like a video and not like the song that goes?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, you can like a video that makes you then like a song.
Sure.
That's happened all the
time. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Okay. All right, cool. So if you can go back, well, we're not going back very far, but say to your 18-year-old self or before you started in this, on this path, and give one piece of advice to yourself, what would you say?
Start earlier.
Yeah.
Start right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Is there something that you used to believe and then later you decided you'd been wrong?
Yeah, you know, I used to believe that, like, you know, making a film is, like, this super far-fetched, out-of-this-world idea that, like, you know, you need to do this and that, and it's just, like, years to do, and the contract phase takes, like, a year, and then it falls through, and it's just,
yeah.
But it's really not. Like, honestly, you meet the right producers, you got a good story, you got your vision straight, and you're driven, it'll happen. So that's a big myth.
Was there moments where you felt like, I can't do this, like, how could I possibly?
No, I don't think so.
Once
just
you're
more,
in it.
Yeah, it was just more so one of those things where it's like, this is going to take forever.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I hope it works out and it doesn't fall through and I have to start all over again. I knew it was going to happen eventually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's just a matter of like when it fully just goes in one big wave.
That's cool. What talent have you always wished you had more of?
Music. I wish I could do music.
What would you do?
If I could do music, I don't know, man. I probably would be a producer.
Okay.
Or like a drummer.
Oh yeah.
I wouldn't want to sing or rap.
Yeah.
I don't think I have the street credibility for that.
I don't know, man. The bar keeps changing for that.
That's true.
Well, you might have already answered this, but if you could choose another career and know that you wouldn't fail, what would it be?
Oh, I'd probably play professional soccer.
Okay.
For sure.
Nice.
Or music. Damn.
Yeah. Those are good choices.
Yeah.
Who would you play for?
Probably like somewhere in England.
Yeah. Premier League.
Probably Premier League, yeah. Definitely.
Favorite team?
Chelsea.
Okay. Nice. They're friends of ours. So who would you be most excited to learn was a fan of your work?
You know, probably like a Quentin Tarantino would be incredible.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's a huge G-Funk fan. I can't imagine he is. He's probably not. But,
I know you got to do a screening for him and RZA.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And, yeah, I know they're actually, they're working together.
Yeah, yeah, they do a lot stuff together.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah, damn, maybe he is. I don't know. Okay. That'd be cool. I think yeah. That'd be really cool, if, you know.
For sure.
He's incredible.
So, I know you said you like to travel. What's your favorite city to travel to?
My favorite city to travel to? I would say, you know what, after coming back from Austin, I love Austin. But I would say, London's awesome. I love New York. I love Costa Rica. Not a city, but Costa Rica is an incredible place.
Yeah.
Adventure and all that and whatnot.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. There's a
bunch. Those are good ones.
Yeah.
I'm down. Do you collect anything?
Do I collect anything? Not really.
No.
No. No.
What's the last great book you read?
Last great book, Steve Jobs' biography, cool, by Walter Isaacson. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Is there a book that's had a big impact on your on you as a filmmaker?
That book, for sure. Yeah. 100%. From a design standpoint, the emphasis he put on design and attention to detail is something that, I've kind of made a staple of what I do. And focus point, make sure everything's clean. And I spent probably 3 days just picking the font for this film.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I mean, I think that's one of the great things about documentaries. Obviously, there's so many stories that need to be told. But I also think, people are just doing really cool things with design in those films, which you kind of can't do in a dramatic film, right? Because it's just a different thing, but fonts and you wouldn't think about a font in a comedy,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like all that, I think it was watching the AM documentary, just the way they transitioned between interviews and all, just all the graphics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's cool stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's you have to stylize your documentary, and
yeah.
Ours is not stylized to an insane level, compared to Superman or something like that.
Sure.
But you do have to have a design and style in mind when you approach it.
Yeah.
You know,
what movie do you think you've seen the most in your life?
What movie I've seen the most in my life? Man. I don't know. I try not to watch a movie more than twice.
Oh wow.
Three times.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it's weird. I just I'll watch it once and I'll watch it again to look at, certain things or I'll watch it once and just hyper analyze, and I'll watch it once for entertainment, and then
yeah.
After that it's if I keep watching it I can't.
Even as a kid?
As a kid, I mean, I'll watch cartoons.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And whatnot. I've seen Munich a bunch.
Oh wow,
That's random. Great. I've seen Catch If You Can.
Okay.
Everyone's seen Home Alone 1,000 times.
Totally.
So if you were to actually go numerically, I've probably seen Home Alone 1,000,000 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that question because it's never it's never the best movie.
Oh yeah, it's always Christmas movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, because it's just on all the time.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. What about favorite DJ?
I'm just going to say artists because I don't really listen to them. I mean, Anderson .Paak.
Yeah. Right, love them. So precious. It's yours. It's mine.
Only one at a time. He's probably my favorite.
Yeah. You've seen him live?
I haven't seen him live, but I've met him. I was at Coachella last year, and he was hanging out with Dre, and I was standing next to him, and I didn't know it was Anderson .Paak at that time because, back then, last Coachella, he wasn't huge yet.
Right.
I think he was just coming off South By, and he's saying, can I get a Corona? And I was like, yeah, for sure, man. And after the fact, my buddy's like, dude, that's Anderson .Paak. I was like, oh, my God.
Man, I took, six people to see him at Coachella.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't take them to Coachella, but, we went over to the tent, and they were like, house music fans that never heard of him.
He's amazing.
And then they're all like Anderson .Paak fans now.
You can't not like him. He's like the blend of soulful, you know, with today. It's like,
no, it's incredible.
He's amazing.
Yeah. Well, good stuff, man. Dude, thank you for making time for this interview. I appreciate it. Can't wait to see the film. I'm bummed that I missed it in Austin, but we'll definitely be looking for it. So how are people going to find you or the film online?
Well, you can find me, that's my email, but I don't know. You can just go to my website.
Are you on social?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram.
Okay.
CarmGill_ on Twitter, CarmGill_.
Okay.
You can find the film, in the next little while, we'll have a distribution deal announced at some point. And then, we'll be at the Nashville Film Festival, Nashville Film Music Festival coming up. And then we'll have our, Canadian premiere coming up as well in April.
Dope.
And then I think there's a few more festivals. I got to check the calendar.
Okay, cool.
But we'll be around.
Yeah.
So people will definitely be able to see it soon.
Nice.
This year for sure.
Can't wait. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, man.
Thanks, dude. Appreciate it. All right, that's a wrap with Karam Gill. Make sure you look for the G-Funk documentary coming soon to a screen near you. And make sure you check out Rebel Radio next week. Peace.